Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Ivamy.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of superhero television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Ghostbusters, Bustin' makes us feel good for the third time.
Bustin' still makes us feel good.
Bustin' continues to feel good.
It always feels good to bust.
The feelings are good. Busting is nice. It's pleasant to bust.
Bustin' was good in the 80s. All right. It was good in the early aughts. It's good today.
Bustin' never expires.
Bustin' doesn't have an expiration.
Timeless.
An absolutely timeless, timeless jam. So we're talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife. We've been building up to this. We did the original Ghostbusters on here. We did Ghostbusters 2 over as a Patreon exclusive episode. If you're one of the patrons or want to become one, that's available over there.
Real fun episode.
Real fun episode. But now we're talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife, the new joint, that new jam just came out in theaters. And as always, whenever we talk about a new property, we are going to give you a spoiler-free review. So we're going to give you a quick little condensed spoiler-free review in case you're on the fence about seeing it, not sure if it's, you know, worth your time or not sure if you're interested in it. Then once you hear the theme song, that's when we're going to be into the spoiler-filled section. So spoiler warning once you hear the theme song. But for now, for a spoiler-free review, start with a simple question. Diana, did you like it?
I'm going to say I liked it. I was going to give it a fine, but fine doesn't seem like the right description of this movie. I'm going to say this film is pleasant. This film doesn't do anything particularly bad, and it doesn't do anything particularly good. But the whole time I'm like, I'm not bored, but I'm not quite entertained. This is just really a pleasant, calm movie viewing experience. Like, there's some good stuff here. Like, Paul Rudd and McKenna Grace are both incredible, but it's paced a little slow, and like, there's only some characters are charming, and it gets slow and it gets fast, and you're kind of intrigued sometimes, and then it drops off. It's a little all over the place, but I think the overall emotion is pleasant. And then in the last 10 minutes, it figures itself out and it gets really, really good. And I'm like, it's too late, but the last 10 minutes is a banger. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a pleasant. Andrew, what did you think about Ghostbusters Afterlife?
I think it was a high like for me.
Oh, a high like.
Yeah. Not full on a love, but a high like. I agree with you on the pleasant energy.
Very pleasant.
Even though I think I liked it more than you, I definitely agree that is a good descriptor of this film. Like, if I were spending a Sunday afternoon on the couch sick, like, this might heal me a little bit. Like, it is just comfortable and pleasant. It's familiar but new enough with new beats without being like groundbreaking. It's just nice. It's just pleasant. That is a wonderful descriptor, and I'm 100% on board with that. I think I'm a little bit more of a like than you, because I do think some of the performances, like McKenna Grace as Phoebe, it is in the stratosphere good. Like, I mean, out of this goddamn world good performances. And I don't think there's a bad performance in this movie, but I think some of them are fine. Some of them are pleasant.
Some of the performances are pleasant. Some are fine and pleasant is very different.
Pleasant, yeah. Some of the performances are pleasant, and then McKenna Grace as Phoebe is something absolutely, like, special. Like, remarkable. I would say worth watching this movie just to see this kid nail this.
The layers of character she has found are so complicated, and she is executing them in a masterclass. I completely agree. She is phenomenal. But oddly enough, like, even though I think she's phenomenal, I'm like, still never any huge laughs.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm recognizing that she's incredible. Like, she is doing so much with this character. Like, she's nerdy, but not in an annoying, like, Sheldon from Big Bang Theory way. She's weirdly unemotional, but also not in a weird Sheldon from Big Bang Theory way.
That's your one reference for a nerdy character.
I mean, for, like, a too much nerdy character, because she's very nerdy. She's very, very smart. She's, like, next level smart. And it's very easy to fall into that. But she's found so much with this. It's incredibly impressive.
I think that it is, if someone's on the fence about seeing it, I flat out say this is 100% worth seeing just to see this one remarkable performance. Like, hands down, like, she is the reason to see this movie if you're on the fence.
Yeah, especially like as the only person I think embodying the Ghostbuster vibe. Except yes. maybe Paul Rudd, but Paul Rudd's also just embodying the Paul Rudd vibe.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Paul Rudd is Paul Rudd and around, and he's great at Paul Rudd and around.
Sure.
And that can be a Ghostbusters vibe, but she is Ghostbusting. It yeah. makes her feel good.
Yeah, Bustin makes her feel good. Yeah. Yeah, all right. So I think I'm a bit higher of a like than you, but it seems like we both enjoyed it to some degree. It's pleasant, though. It's definitely pleasant.
Okay, we've agreed on if you would like a pleasant movie experience, if you're feeling sick, mm-hmm. maybe if you're folding laundry.
There you go. Might be a laundry. I'd put this above a laundry movie.
Put this above a laundry movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is like just settle in. Nothing's going to surprise you. Nothing's going to make you too
yeah.
uncomfortable. It's... Yeah.
It's pleasant.
It's pleasant. Man, we're done.
We're done.
This episode's over. It's pleasant.
And can it be spoiled?
It can't be spoiled.
I would also agree.
That's all I'll say on the matter, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a few twists. There's a few turns. I think the heart of this can be spoiled. And, yeah, I think if you have a fondness for Ghostbusters, you want to kind of go in fresh, I think that there is... definitely some added nostalgia if you kind of grew up loving this. But I think either way, you want to go in reasonably fresh.
I think even no nostalgia, because if you'll recall, like I was like pretty mid-tier fine on the first two Ghostbusters.
Sure,
and
sure.
I was still like, these are nice surprises.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. All right, well, that's it. It can be spoiled, and it is pleasant, and I think it's worth seeing just for McKenna Grace. That's it for the spoiler-free review. Before we get into the spoiler-filled section of the episode, we want to take a moment to tell you about one of our sponsors. We want to tell you about Batman The Audio Adventures. Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath this facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader in Batman The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max.
Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure told across 10 episodes is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fran Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman The Audio Adventures only on HBO Max.
Thank you, Batman The Audio Adventures, for sponsoring this podcast and for being Batman.
We love Batman.
And now let's get into the episode. Let's go into the spoiler-filled section. Let's talk about Ghostbusters Afterlife. All right, so now we are in the spoiler-filled section.
Spoiling makes us feel good.
The original Busters are in it, but we'll get to that a little
spoiler,
later.
That's a spoiler, but at the same time, everyone must be like, "Well, yeah, we guessed."
I think so, and I mean they do tip the hand. They show in the trailers
that
her
Ray
calling
the original,
that Ray at the very least. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit surprised that they got Bill Murray back.
I was also surprised they got Bill Murray back because the trailer only showing Ray, I was like, oh, I guess he's the only one who wanted to come back. Because did he not come back for the Lady Ghostbusters?
Yes. for the female Ghostbusters from what was that 2016 or something?
Yeah.
The 2016 Ghostbusters, he was in it playing a different character, and Ernie Hudson also had a part in it.
Yeah.
But Aykroyd, I don't believe did anything in that.
Yeah, I can't remember now.
So the trailers for this one was like, we got Aykroyd back, and you really think Aykroyd's going to be it? You know, nothing against Aykroyd, not to be like, oh, it's.
But the whole crew.
The whole crew is there.
Is what you're paying the money for, or not paying the money for, but hoping for.
You're hoping
to get a whole squad of Ghostbusters.
Yes. Yeah.
You want the full squad.
Well, before we get to like the reveal of the Ghostbusters, a lot of this is built on the kind of like the heart of Egon as a character from the previous Ghostbusters. And obviously this character Phoebe, who is his granddaughter, and then Callie, who is his daughter. I do really like this opening of like, what does a Ghostbuster do post-retirement? I mean, we kind of see, we find out throughout the story that he kind of like ran away to fight a bigger cause, but like this, like a Ghostbuster on their own doing one wild job. It was a really cool, sequence.
It was a really cool sequence. Overall, I think the way that this story is written as like, it's about Egon, but Harold Ramis has passed away, is done really well. Just crafted incredibly well, as we want it to center around Egon, but he is obviously unavailable. Rest in peace, Harold Ramis. So I think it's all incredibly well crafted. The opening's very fun. It is a little annoying that they can't show his face because it's supposed to be him, but they can't have him. So it's like you're like, we know who it's supposed to be, I guess. It's more fun when he's a ghost and stuff's just moving and you're like, ah, I know it's him.
Right.
It's a more enjoyable part of his story. But yeah, the opening sequence is fun. The I really like the opening sequence has, I think, the less, what do I want to say? The more subtle callbacks, like the way the chair is grabbed is the way that Sigourney Weaver is grabbed in her chair in the first one.
Oh, I didn't even catch that, really.
So I like the subtle callbacks to earlier Ghostbusters, and I think some later callbacks are a little too much.
Right.
But this was a really nice, subtle one of the same hands popping up in the same places in the chair.
Oh, I didn't even catch that. That's nice.
So the opening I did really enjoy. It felt like a really nice, like, we're elevating what Ghostbusters are, what do they do on their own, but it's still connected to the original.
Right.
And also a nice little callback that it's the same villain.
Yes.
Because of, they pop out of the chair the same because we only got one way to pop out of a chair. Because we're the gatekeeper or the keymaster. I don't know which one we are.
They're interchangeable. They're one or the other.
One's a guy and one's a girl.
I guess. Yes. Gendered monsters.
They are clearly gendered monsters.
I hadn't really thought about that.
Even though Gozer has no gender according to this movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gozer's non-binary, but Gozer's two binaries are binary.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I never put the chair thing together. I just love like how it's shot. It's creepy, but also like it walks that fine line of like horror tension while also being like action fun at the same time, where like I am on the edge of my seat, but I'm never like too tense to enjoy the scene. I just really love how it's shot and how it's filmed, and like it's beautiful and it's just a great little moment of the movie.
It is really cool. Yeah, and it's really, it's got this like kind of eeriness to it in the fact that like his trap fails and then he just sits and waits to die.
Yeah.
Like very creepy stuff going on there. It's like in a way that doesn't feel honestly very Egon. Like I think he would scramble around and try to fix it.
That he would have a backup plan on the backup plan.
Yeah, not even a backup plan, but like try to fix the original plan at the very least.
Right.
But it's like cool. At the same time.
Yeah.
So I'm not like against it, but I was just like, oh, it doesn't actually like give me Egon vibes. But it's also been like 25 years. Egon's changed.
And also like he managed to get either one of them, either the gatekeeper or the keymaster in the trap and underneath the house.
So he knew kind of his job had been done for the most part.
Yeah, so I can see him being a little bit resigned knowing that his job is done or that someone's going to take it over, because it is also like a passing of the torch movie. I kind of want to like go big picture and kind of talk about Egon being the thread and the heart of this movie to a certain degree. I love this opening sequence. I love kind of seeing him continuing his job. I agree with you. I think the movie works best when it is him as an unseen spirit playing chess with his granddaughter.
Moving lights around, pointing at what she needs to fix it. It's like, that is a really, like, delightful Casper the Friendly Ghost kind of vibe happening.
I agree. And that's when I felt like the warmth of his character a lot. I do think in the end, when we get full-on Force Ghost Egon, I feel like that hangs around a little too long. Because, like, this whole opening sequence is done very delicately to be like, we're not going to show his face. You know who he is. We all know who he is. We don't need to show you the CGI face of a deceased actor. Like, we can just dance around it. And frankly, it looks better for it. And then
we'll show you clips on YouTube and you'll be like, oh, that's Egon.
Yeah.
And his granddaughter looks just
like him. So you'll get
makeup and hair department.
Mwah, chef's kiss.
Because she's a blonde with straight hair in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost didn't recognize her from her IMDb photo. I'm like, who is this woman? But I do think that the Force Ghost Egon a touch overstays his welcome a bit at the end, where like when you when he first shows up and you get just like a touch, I'm like, oh, okay, they are gonna show his face. That's a little interesting. But after a couple of minutes of screen time, I'm like, okay, now it's actually kind of getting weird hitting this uncanny valley where I don't like it.
He did stay a little long, especially because they obviously like used like old footage of him to create the new footage. And it felt like they only had like one shot that like where his face moved and it kept repeating on a loop. Yeah. Like, oh, he's happy and he's like, huh, and he's got like a little change of face. And it's over and over again, because when he grabs onto Sophie, his granddaughter's blaster, and helps her, it was very emotional.
That got me.
Very wonderful.
That got
me. I'm crying. When the other Ghostbusters see him, continued to have tears. Him sticking around for full hugs from his daughter, almost full conversations, even though he's not
saying
talking,
anything, yeah,
was a little bit too much. And this will bring me to my first question about the plot. Not that I wanted this to happen to him, but we have to admit, as a ghost, he should have got sucked into the big trap. Gozer,
ooh.
We're standing in a field that is a giant ghost trap. Gozer, ooh. And both the gatekeeper and keymaster get sucked in.
It sucked in all of the ghosts like from around town.
Everything from the mountain, yeah. Muncher, everything.
If you're a ghost anywhere nearby, you just got busted.
And Egon's just like, do-do-do-do-do, I made it, so I'm immune? You're still a ghost, my dude.
Interesting. I had not considered that.
Because I thought it was going to be this, like, honestly, and this would have broken my heart even more, because he already, like, left his family and friends to go, like, protect the world. I'm like, if he has to also live in a trap to protect the world...
With Gozer?
Like, because you can't open it and let her out.
Right.
He'd be stuck in there forever. So I'm like, I didn't want them to trap him in there with Gozer
forever.
But there's no reason that he shouldn't be in a trap.
Interesting.
You should be trapped, my boy.
No, that's a really good point.
I did come up with a workaround if we want to not have him in a trap. The traps might only catch demonic ghosts.
Oh, I could see that.
Because Gozer's not human. Muncher's not human.
Right.
Sometimes they show ghosts that seem to be human, but they never get like a, that's Gary. It's always like a skeleton.
Yeah, it's always, it's incorporeal demons. It's not really like, human specters aren't really the ghosts.
Yeah, it wasn't until Ghostbusters 2 where the guy in the painting was the bad guy that even any human was a ghost.
That's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about how they're not traditional spectral ghosts.
No, they're not spectral ghosts. They are
incorporeal
pretty much always
demons.
Yeah, it's not like my aunt's here and she's haunting this house.
Right.
It is.
Oh, no, it's an old general from the Civil War who won't leave the battlefield. Or like it's an old lover who won't go to the afterlife.
It's not Sixth Sense.
Huh.
It is demons. So if they have a different energy than Egon, then he can stay.
Interesting. That's a very interesting hypothesis.
So I've got a lot on the mind about the plots.
Okay. All right. But I think I'm glad we both agree that like it was
a little too much.
Too long. Yeah.
And like dissolving away in the hug was, I think, just because he
I think just holding the proton pack and helping his granddaughter bust one last ghost.
Ah, Bustin.
Bustin makes him feel good and then allows him to move on to the proper afterlife.
Aww.
Like, I would have been okay with, I think that was the right amount. And yeah, just hanging around like a force ghost, saying goodbye, having goodbyes and shit like that was like, yeah, just a touch too far.
I agree. But then right after that, when it said four heralds, like the tears.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Jesus, yeah, the last 10 minutes of this movie fucking killed me.
Yeah, really rips your heart out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay, so that's the big picture. I just want to kind of like step out and go the Egon of it all, because it opens and closes with Egon. But to kind of talk about like everything else in this movie, the whole midsection, is McKenna Grace as Phoebe gives a damn legendary performance.
Mwah. Like these are I am chef's kissing this young woman.
It is unbelievable. Like, this is a teenager giving a Oscar-worthy, incredible performance. Like, I remember when Stranger Things came out and everyone was like, Millie Bobby Brown is a star. I watched Stranger Things and I was like, Millie Bobby Brown is good. And I guess she's a star. But this is one where I'm watching and I'm like, McKenna Grace is everything. Like, this is flawless. Like, I sincerely mean, literally, flawless.
She's great. Like, I don't even know where to start or what else to say other than that. Like, flawless in the way she inhabited Egon as Egon's granddaughter. Like, just, like, the physical attributes, the way, hair and makeup on the glasses and the hair and everything. She looks incredible. But just, like, I'm nerdy and I'm awkward in a believable way, but I'm also likable in a believable way, and I have a lot going on in my life, but not, like, too much. Not, like, an annoying teenager about it. Just, like, we're poor and I'm smart and I don't know how to tell jokes, but I got jokes.
Yeah.
But, and I'm trying to make a friend and I'm excited about it, but I'm not too excited about it. Like, yeah, she is this perfect balance of literally everything. Just very pleasant. It's very,
very pleasant. There's like little choices that she has made with the character that I don't think of as attributes of Egon, but feel to embody his spirit a little bit. Like, her emphasis of certain syllables, like, she's very articulate in the way that she will say certain words. And, like, she really emphasizes and adds punch. And it feels very, like, somewhere between scientific and robotic. And that wasn't how Egon talked. But it is a performance choice that feels to embody that spirit, which is so hauntingly perfect. I love it.
Yeah. I don't even know what else to say about it. She was she was everything. She held this movie together.
Yes.
Because I was iffy on a lot of the other characters. Like Finn Wolfhard, I was like, I don't care.
You're not doing anything wrong. Yeah.
But you're not like doing anything that I care about.
I think it was a character that didn't need to be there. And Finn Wolfhard's performance was fine, but it really is like the entire plot line is I am a character, I am a boy who's flirting with a girl. And that is it. And it's kind of one note, and it doesn't really go anywhere, and it's not super plot relevant. He does a fine job. Like, there's definitely nothing wrong. There's nothing that holds back the movie. But I just think from a writing standpoint, it's not the most engaged character.
No, and they didn't even, like, try. Like, there's little things where I thought they were giving him an arc, like, you know, they're very, very poor. And then he immediately gets a job. And I'm like, oh, okay. So he's, like, he's trying to help the family. He's, like, putting on responsibilities. But it's just to hang out with this girl, and it's not about making money in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really bring up that he's poor. It's not bothering him, but he does bring up that it's poor, and it is kind of bothering him, but he has no arc and no relevance.
Like,
until
he has a job and his mother doesn't, but that's not really relevant at all.
Doesn't come
like
up. He's not resentful of it, but he also might be. Like, yeah, he is literally not relevant until he drives Ecto-1 out of that barn. Yeah. He might as well not exist in the movie until that moment happens.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah. And then there's like other side characters. One that I warmed up to that I did roll my eyes at first was Podcast.
His name shouldn't be Podcast.
Yes.
Oh boy. He did great though. He was definitely a guy who grows on you.
Yes. The Podcast is, I think,
Logan Kim.
Logan Kim?
Yeah.
Podcast is the perfect example of the type of character that a man in his late 40s writes about what he thinks teens and preteens are. That is, I'm telling you right now, 12-year-olds aren't into long-form media. Podcasting is a big thing. We're doing it. It's like for the zeitgeist of podcasting, there are shows like Only Murders in the Building.
I'm just about to say.
Is a great personification of the podcast obsession era. But the target demo are not 12-year-olds for long-form media. This dude would be like, it would still be hacky and cheesy, but it would be TikTok. It would be short form. It's something different than that. So it doesn't make sense. It is the most a 40-year-old wrote this on what he thinks that a 12-year-old does and was not at all what the writer did when he was 12 because this thing didn't exist. But this kid just does such a fun, playful job with the performance and really owns it and makes it something special.
He really does. Like, and it's weird to even think any kid makes any long-form content. Mm. Because when I think of movies like Super 8 or even like Dawson's Creek or something, which are about filmmakers, kids make short films.
Yeah.
When a movie's about a kid filmmaker, which I think is equivalent to podcasting in this day and age, it's always like, I'm making a short film. It's going to be like 12 minutes or 48 minutes max or something like that.
Right.
So why would a child make like long form, I can't decide if I'm narrating my life or if I go into a booth and discuss a mystery.
And at the end of the movie, we find out Dan Aykroyd is his one subscriber, but like, why? How? It doesn't even seem like your show has been about ghosts. Like, your show...
He liked mysteries.
Yeah.
But he didn't go into ghosts until they found a ghost trap.
Yeah. So I don't know why Dan Aykroyd's, why Ray is listening at all.
Ray listens to everything. He's a big
every
supporter.
Every podcast. He's just like supporting.
He's part of our Patreon. He's listening right now. Thank you, Ray. $10 patron. He's really putting it in.
Yeah. And then I think there's shows like Truth Seekers, the Amazon Prime one with
Simon,
Nick Frost.
Nick Frost.
Nick Frost.
Not Simon Pegg.
Not Simon Pegg,
Simon
but Nick
Pegg's
Frost.
In it.
He is in it. But True Seekers is one that goes into the spiritual YouTube component, which is where that medium and those type of I'm a ghost hunter
lie.
He would
absolutely have a YouTube channel.
It would be a YouTube thing, not a podcast. So I think that this is just an out of touch 40, 50 year old dude who's just like, what do kids love? Kids love podcasts. I don't get it, but kids like it.
Especially if he's a kid who's going up into the mountains and looking at this mine and this temple and, like, a very visual thing.
Yeah.
He's like, he could do TikToks in front of a giant temple.
Yeah.
about how it's got ghosts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also his name's Podcast.
You got to give him a human name.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You can't call him Podcast.
They didn't give
him
a human name. They call him Podcast the whole movie, which implies he's like the only one in town with a podcast, and he's not.
There's no way he is.
There's no way. I don't care how old or small this town is.
Right.
He's not the only one with a podcast.
And it also implies that what does he refer to himself as on his podcast?
Hey, it's me, Podcast.
It's me, Podcast, on Podcast. Welcome to Podcast, Podcast, Podcast. Like, you need to have a human name. You can't do this.
The writers had one keyword that they needed for this character, and it was Podcast.
It was Podcast.
And then they were done.
Yeah. So this is, I think, probably the worst and out-of-touch written thing in the movie. And even then, it's not that bad, but also the kid saves it from the brink and brings it back.
He really does. Him and McKenna Grace also work really well together. Like, he's not at her level, but they're both really good. And it, for any character that I don't enjoy off the bat to win me over is very impressive. Like, I think he really starts to shine, like, when he drops her off and he starts recording her to be like, just going to see if you get ripped apart by demons. And she's just like, okay. But, like, not too weird about it. And he's not too weird about it. But they're both just like, oh, that's weird.
They're both awkward in different ways. And that's the perfect thing.
That's the perfect friendship.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that, like, the lazier writing of socially awkward characters that a lot of movies and TV shows will do is I found someone and bonded with them because they're the exact same kind of weird as me. Or I found someone who's the opposite of me and we're going to balance each other out. And this is just no, we're both weird. But this dude chose long form web media and I chose science. But we're similar brands of weird.
Yeah, I think other movies, specifically I feel like Stargirl has that really nerdy character. Uh-huh. And she never stops talking is her thing.
Right.
And I think easily that could be Podcast if he's a guy doing long form podcasts. He easily could just never shut up and then Sophie would be quiet. But they still balance them and they don't make him like that, which I think would be the instinct. And be like, well, he's got a long form podcast and a microphone. He never shuts up.
Yeah.
But he's not like that at all.
No. He's cool. He's chill. He finds the right balance. For a character that they introduce him as Podcast, I rolled my eyes. And over the course of this movie, I went from rolling my eyes to at the end of the movie yelling, get him, Podcast! That is a wild swing for a movie to make for me.
Way to go, Podcast. You won us over.
So that's an impressive ride.
That's an impressive ride. If we're just going on people who impress us, Paul Rudd always impresses me.
Sexiest man alive.
Sexiest man alive. Literally, there is nothing sexier than a man who has just had a successful date and he's happy about it. And he dances his way through a Walmart.
Just to get some ice cream.
It was the most charming, simplest little scene, easily cuttable. Like, you could just cut to him finding the marshmallow man. You don't need an establishing, minute and a half of him dancing through a Walmart. But it would have been a crime to cut it.
Yep.
Would have been an absolute crime. It's nothing, but it's so funny.
It's so funny. And, oh, God, just the little dance and the little move. And, it lingers on him long enough that for a split second, I'm like, why are we here?
What? happening?
And then I'm like, oh, right, to just watch Paul Rudd exist. That's the only reason any of us are here in the theater right now.
Why do we pay money for movie tickets to watch Paul Rudd do literally anything?
Yeah.
Sometimes just things in the background, because he's always doing something, and it's never obtrusive, and it's never too much. Like,
right.
At the police station scene, I really like he sees a proton pack for the first time, and like he's like trying to pay attention to the cops and be like, yeah, kids, you're in trouble, but he's also trying to look at the proton pack and inspect it and like and be like, we gotta get the proton pack back.
We gotta get it.
Because at that point he'd only seen a trap and he hadn't seen a proton pack and he really wanted to look at it, but like the cop was very mean.
Just a delightful man. And also I will say the right level of product placement for a movie, because obviously that whole scene is just an ad for Walmart. Like, we're seeing the outside of Walmart. We know that he went to Walmart. We saw the price tag. He went to Walmart to get some Ben and Jerry's ice cream. And on paper, it's like, okay, Walmart paid some money and Ben and Jerry's paid some money. So you got to have a scene where Paul Rudd goes to Walmart to get some Ben and Jerry's ice cream. And the premise of that on paper is like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is going to be
how are we going to make that work?
Brutal. And we're like, and then it's just got to be such a relief to be like, oh, right, it's Paul Rudd. And adding so much character and charm to what is essentially a commercial is wonderful. And I think only Paul Rudd can do it. It's well-structured and written, but only Paul Rudd can sell something like that.
Yeah, for a product placement-y scene, it's as good as it can get. And then Paul Rudd elevated it to one of the best scenes in the film. Oh, because then he jumps through his windshield and he's got no windshield.
Oh, right. He's got no windshield. Oh. And his relationship with Phoebe as well, and like as a teacher who is clearly doing nothing, literally nothing at all.
Well, I feel like he's not actually a teacher because he's only a summer teacher. Mm. And I think he's just here to study the earthquakes but needs to make money while he studies the earthquakes.
Right, so he's scamming the school system to be a public school summer teacher.
He absolutely is.
School teacher, yes.
He's very smart and is smart enough to be a teacher but has no interest in teaching.
Right, right.
He's here for the earthquakes, baby.
Right.
Earthquakes make him feel good.
Which is very much, I think, like the soul of Ghostbusters to a certain degree that this movie captures, which is just a like people who don't quite fit in and only want to trick the system to study things that don't belong in the system. And I feel like people who are just like sarcastic and think that like a lot of traditional structures and society's things are dumb and not for them. It is very subtly the heart of ghostbusting.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely would approve of like just building your own chamber to put the ghosts in. Hmm. Screw the EPA.
Yeah.
Like yeah, he's
like
a,
all the Ghostbusters.
He's a rogue scientist.
I think it was just Egon and Venkman were the two that worked at the university. Or maybe Ray did too.
No, Ray did too, but in like the psychology department.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I don't think any of them wanted it. Maybe Ray, but like it's like they were taking advantage of the university.
They didn't want to teach. They wanted the grant money and the yeah.
No students were better off for having them at that university.
Not a single one.
Just like the students in Paul Rudd's classroom.
No, none of them were. Well, Paul Rudd even has like a really nice speech about how scientists are like the badasses of the world, which is nice. He's like, oh, the arts, they just read a book or and like the
yeah, history is safe.
History
arts
is safe. In science, you gotta open up a trap and it might explode in your face. Scientists are badass. And I'm like, fuck, scientists
are badass. Yeah.
Make a vaccine, motherfuckers.
Get on in it,
get
science.
COVID done.
Get all in there.
So really nice. So that's really nice. This will bring me to a weird thing, which I'm like, not weird, but so science is nice. When Paul Rudd is on a date with the mom and she's like, I don't care for science. That was a weird vibe.
That was a weird vibe.
Mean, when you have Paul Rudd, who loves science so much, it was like, well, this date's just over.
Yeah.
All he's going to talk about is science. Like, you guys shouldn't even bother.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit weird. I like Carrie Coon, who plays Callie, who plays the mom. Some of the writing of her character is a little sloppy and unmotivated. And it's like, I feel like her blaming and hating the concept of science, hating absentee fathers or people who get distracted, like hating, I think there is a version of this that has a little bit more heart where maybe like, you know, maybe Paul Rudd is supposed to help Phoebe with something or like there is a love story in there where it's like you were supposed to help with something and got distracted by doing science and that is more of a trigger as opposed to just being like, I do not like people who appreciate science, which is such a like
too broad.
Yeah, I don't mean to be like a nerd here who's like science is everywhere, but science is every like you can't not like science. That's not a thing that you can not like.
Yeah, you cannot have an interest in discussing science.
Yeah,
but you can't be like fuck science. Like that's too.
You can be not good at like any other subject. Like imagine meeting someone who's just like I hate math. Like what? Like just the general subject? Like you're bad at math? No, I hate math. Like,
my dad left me for math.
Okay. That's not how that works. You know, your dad left you to save the world, but at this point in the story, from your perspective, your dad left you for mental health reasons. Mm. Like at no point, no woman in her scenario is like, my father left because science. No adult woman in that scenario is like, science is clearly what is to blame. If you don't believe that there are world-ending ghosts and that your father is the last protector of humanity, you believe that your father left due to deteriorating mental health or used ghosts as an excuse to abandon his family.
Yeah.
Like, if either of our parents left and said the reason was ghosts, us now as adults wouldn't be like, it's ghosts and science that did it. We would be like, our parent left us because they abandoned their family.
Or at the very least, you should hate ghosts. Mm. Like, you really got to get it more specific.
You got to get more narrow.
Because we do live in a world where ghosts are real, and they've been established to be real since the 80s.
Yes.
Like, so ghosts are real.
Right.
But you should hate ghosts or...
Or being just, too dedicated to your job.
Yeah.
Or,
and they also, like, she had so many weird lines where I was like, I do like your performance, and I feel like you're a good mom. But, like, things like, I wish Phoebe would get into trouble? What mom in the history of moms, especially a mom who's struggling financially, has no job, is emotionally on the brink? Like, what mom who's not even crushing it, a mom who is having problems, is like, God, I wish my daughter would just really fuck something up.
Get into trouble that I cannot afford her to get in right now.
Like, my daughter's making me look bad, I guess. Like, she's really got her life together. Her daughter does her taxes for sure.
Oh, yeah. You're like, clearly, and I'm not saying that she's a bad mom. Clearly, there are some issues. Like, I don't think it really gets into, like, why don't you have a job? And I'm not trying to judge the unemployed, but it's like, your son has a job. Your daughter does your taxes. You care about these children and feed them, but it doesn't really get into, like, why are you so destitute that you have to move to a new town and live in an abandoned mansion, live in an abandoned farm, and you're, like, she's not going around town looking for work either. She's just,
That doesn't bother me, because she is hoping she can sell the farm.
Okay, okay.
Like, so she's looking for money in that way.
Okay.
So that doesn't bother me too much. But yeah, like they talk about how like the husband left and like that can definitely ruin you. But yeah. They just say she's bad with money. But I'm like, I do need to know what's the problem.
Yes.
What is the issue here? Like there should be something brought up about how your son immediately got a job.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That should be brought up.
And also, you know that your son is not of legal age to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't know what it is about like... Sometimes movies just do this where it's like, you know how employers are don't do background checks or check to see or ask for photo ID whatsoever. It's small town, I guess, maybe. But like the mom knows her son shouldn't have a job.
I think you can have a job at 15.
Can you?
Yeah. I think
I thought that was the whole thing about him lying at his age, about his age, that he wasn't supposed to have that job.
No, I think that girl was older than him.
I think it was both.
Oh, I don't think she cares about the job. She just works there. She doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I don't think she cares about the job, but I do think he lied for both. But yeah, maybe you can have that job at 15. I don't fucking know.
I had jobs at 15.
All right, fair enough.
I had under the counter job. Actually, I did get paid in cash.
Yeah.
Ooh, wait a minute.
Yeah, a small town.
Wait a minute, family convenience store.
Yeah, you lived this, didn't you?
Was I child labor?
I don't think you were on the books.
Yeah, I did get paid an envelope of cash.
Yeah, you weren't on the books, girl. There was no...
Oh, man.
You never got a T4 for that,
did
you?
I did not.
Yeah,
get a
that
T4
was off the books.
That job.
Yeah.
I also didn't get one from the bingo hall I worked at. Okay. I had a lot of jobs.
Yeah. Those were off the books. Those for our American listeners, a T4 is, I believe, your W8s.
Yeah, or your W8 Ben. W8
Ben is the foreign one. Yeah. So, but I believe, yeah, tax forms.
A tax form.
It's a tax form.
Proof that you worked at a place.
Yes.
Do you get one?
And if you didn't, get one and got paid cash. You never legally worked there. I'm going to say that.
One more thing about Paul Rudd and the mom, and it's not even about them. It's just about, this is a more family-friendly Ghostbusters. This is very much like, not for kids, but it's not.
They're not chain-smoking and Dan Aykroyd doesn't fuck a ghost.
Dan Aykroyd, spoilers? Dan Aykroyd did not fuck
a ghost.
Actually,
I'm sorry,
movie.
You know what? I misspoke. Dan Aykroyd never fucked a ghost. He was blown by a ghost. And he fucked goo.
He did do both those things.
But neither of those things happened in this movie. And there's
movie.
No chain smoking.
The smoking's completely gone. Everyone's quit.
Yeah, you get a touch of it when they play the ad on YouTube. And then I'm like, oh yeah, right. Bill Murray like hucking a smoke as he steps out of a cab.
There was that much smoking in Ghostbusters
That they couldn't put together TV ad for the Ghostbusters without them smoking in it.
One thing I think they could have dropped is I really do not need possessed gatekeeper keymaster sex.
Mm.
This feels like a really unnecessary component of the, like, even if you're currently, even if the two people have gone on one date, this is still a gross thing to do to two humans.
I agree with you.
And it's especially gross in the first movie because those two are not dating.
Yes.
Or romantically involved in any way.
Yeah, there's all kinds of problems there.
All kinds of problems.
And I would say even the original movie dances around it a little bit more delicately where it's like Sigourney Weaver is like, Bill Murray, are you the keymaster? Let's have sex. And it's not a like... No one in exposition dialogue says she fucks Rick Moranis later. Like,
no one brings
this movie
it up.
Very explicitly is like, we don't show it, but we need you all to know as an audience, they fuck.
These two fucked, absolutely. And this is why I'm absolutely against the necessity of the sex. Because later, Lucky, Finn Wolfhard's girlfriend, gets turned into one of the things.
Yes.
So clearly, sex is not integral.
Mm. But at that point, Gozer's already released.
She has been released.
So I think the sex is for the release, but I agree with
you. Sex is for release.
Yeah, Bustin' makes me feel good.
Makes us feel good.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Sex is for release, but I think in this like family-friendlier PG version starring children,
yeah,
they can just hold hands or something. Some kind of, you touch hands and a big force field appears. I don't care.
Yep.
We don't need non-consensual possessed sex.
Yeah. On the possession, I like that the mother, played by Carrie Coon, I think she does a great job. I like her performance. I like that even once she becomes possessed, she does like a transformation into the dress that's similar to what Sigourney Weaver has, which is weird, but I'm like, oh, okay, you have like a look. I like that this actress is like, I'm going to kind of make it my own. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit similar. But Paul Rudd, once possessed, is like, I am Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
He just, like, Paul Rudd made the decision that possessed Rick Moranis was not like that because of the body it possessed, but that's the Keymaster's behavior.
The Keymaster was a little awkward.
Yeah, the Keymaster was not the smoothest character. And I kind of love that Paul Rudd was like, no, I'm doing Rick Moranis' Keymaster.
Paul Rudd was like, oh, this is a repeated character. I'm going to study the old character, see what his traits were. Because you're right. Yeah, the possession is the same person.
Yeah.
So whatever Rick Moranis did, it should be very similar. So yeah, he's like not sexy. His hair is all weird. He like sees a pretty lady. He's like, oh my.
Huh? You want to eat this flower? He's awkward.
And
the Keymaster's awkward.
Yeah, and she's assertive and powerful and sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing traits for these dog demons.
Yeah, and she plays it similar, but it's not like, oh, Sigourney Weaver. But to be fair, Sigourney Weaver's possessed as the gatekeeper is just a like, I'm assertive, I'm sexual.
Her scenes were also way longer.
Yeah,
she had a lot more screen time as the gatekeeper.
But it's not as remarkable as Rick Moranis's Keymaker. No. And
I really liked the callback to the weird breathing she did for a second.
For one second,
she's like... the way Sigourney Weaver did when she got sedated in the first movie.
I love the dog breathing, too. Oh, it's really good. Yeah, that's why they're doing that.
Oh, my God. I didn't clue in that's why
I mean, dog adjacent, but... They're dog-like.
Well, in the first movie, she only did it when she got sedated, so I thought it was her body reacting to the drug.
To the sedation. No, that's them being dogs.
That's them being dogs.
Dog hellhounds.
It's subtle. I like it.
It is subtle.
Now I like it more.
Here's something that I almost forgot to bring up because it's so quick in the movie. J.K. Simmons as, I forget the name of the character.
Shador or...
Shador or...
Yeah, he's the guy who like built the first building in the first movie.
Built the building and built this town.
I think he's not on IMDb.
No, because they're trying to keep that a surprise.
No, he's not here.
But in the movie, for a fraction of a second,
there's clearly a much longer scene that's been deleted there.
There's like, clearly
the
like
editing,
some
the editing of the whole Gozer appearing is off and weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened on the filming or the editing or what, because J.K. Simmons did not agree to take this role to say half a line and then get ripped into.
Which is funny in a certain regard. You know, this is like, you know, this is a Chris Hemsworth riding into a force field. Like, it is funny.
That's a great moment.
It's funny in like an anti-comedy comedy kind of a way. So it does have charm and merit within itself. But you don't get JK for that. And they've been building to JK as this guy by seeing him in this coffin.
And the scene wasn't even built up long enough for him to be, like, ripped in half. Like, I think he needed, like, 30 seconds longer of a monologue for that joke to even work.
Yeah, to be like, please, Gozer, like, we will rule this, like, a little bit more groveling or more, like, and
or
now...
even just seeing him, like, wake up. Yeah. He just appeared. Actually, this is a problem I had with the entire movie. Like, I don't know if this was the edit or the filming, but there were not very good establishing shots during action sequences. Okay. And it was a lot of just close-ups of faces. And there was not good, like, what's the layout? What's happening? Please establish who just stood up, how they got to where they're going. Like, a lot of it was really messy during, I think, every action scene except the Ecto-1 chase. The Ecto-1 chase was quite good.
That was very well choreographed.
The Ecto-1 chase, I have no problems with, but everything with Gozer, everything with J.K. Simmons, a lot of the stuff on the farm with Gozer was really poorly, like, because, like, Phoebe's over here with Egon's ghost, and then all of a sudden they're next to the Ghostbusters, but they never showed her moving over to the Ghostbusters on the other side. Like, just, like, really, like, sloppy things like that are in the whole movie.
And it does feel like it's a lot of stuff, like, cut for time to tighten up fractions of a second at a time, but it added up.
It adds up quick. And when you're cutting things, you don't cut J.K. Simmons' only scene. There's definitely more there, and you can cut things with, like, the brother and sister. You can cut things at the diner, like, cut some of the muncher ghost busting. Like, that muncher scene took forever. We took three tries to catch him.
Three tries is too many to get muncher.
Three tries is too many for muncher.
Yeah. I think, just one. That chase scene is good. That RC car is going at, like, 100 miles per hour, which is insane. But it's a fun chase scene.
I'm okay with the car going that fast because Egon built it. They didn't, like, grab that in a store and bring it. Like, Egon did something to that little car. But it's going crazy.
Oh, you think that was Egon's RC car?
It was in the truck already.
Okay, good point.
It had a trap built into it.
All right, fair enough.
I think that's how Egon was catching things all on his own.
Interesting. Okay.
And the gunner seat's so cool.
The gunner seat is so cool. And, like... yeah, them getting their mom out of the possession and just being like, hey, mom, there's ghosts. We're super competent. Like,
we've
that
already
was
caught
nice.
Several ghosts. Yeah, that was probably one of the funner scenes. Yeah, we've already caught them. We're experts at it.
Yeah. Her finding the wall of herself was both heartwarming and a bit much at the same time. Like, it was, I think, how a... Egon, for sure, is on the autistic spectrum. It is for sure how a scientifically minded, slightly socially awkward person like Egon might actually, like, track his daughter's life. Because typically, like, I've seen this type of thing in media before, and it's like, no one does that. Like, no one's like, I would like to see a photo of my daughter. Time to go to my daughter wall. Like, you sprinkle some around the house.
That's a serial killer wall.
That is a serial killer wall. But it having, like, notes about her growing up and shit like that, it did feel like Egon.
It felt like a science wall. And it felt more loving.
Yeah. Yeah, to a certain degree.
It felt more loving. It did raise... It filled many questions of when he left her.
Mm.
Because originally I got the impression that he like left like when she was like one or two. Because she said, I'm not sad he's dead. I didn't know him. So I'm like, oh, okay. So he left at like crazy, crazy young. You literally didn't meet him. But I'm like, where'd he get these photos? Like, who was keeping tabs on her?
This is weird. This is one of the problems with the story, is that they have no interest. And I'm not saying they have to go into this, but the movie has no interest in even expositing what happened to the mother.
Where was the mother? Because it wasn't Janine.
Yes.
And that was the only option on the table.
Yes.
In the lore.
Yeah. And I think because it's not in the lore, and it's kind of a sad thing to be like, you didn't want to add to the lore to a certain degree, but the whole job of this movie is adding to the lore.
You add the kids and you add...
So the mother somehow raised their daughter, but then also, I guess, is also deceased and doesn't exist and is inconsequential, but also mailed him photographs, but also never told her daughter the truth. So, like, it is just this, like, where was the mother? It adds some plot gaps.
Yeah. Like, if I, honestly, like, I see my dad, like, once a year. We don't live in the same province, but I see my dad all the time.
Hmm.
If I went into my dad's basement and there was a wall of photos of events I knew he didn't attend,
right,
I'd be freaked the fuck out. I'd be like, who's taking a photo of me and sending them to my dad? Assuming, like, he didn't just get them off Facebook and print them. I don't know.
Right.
a possibility. Yeah,
also a possibility in this age.
Just printing straight from Facebook and putting them up on your wall.
Yeah.
But it's creepy.
Yeah, it is. It's a little creepy.
It's creepy it's not creepy because he is a little awkward, but it's creepy when you think about, like, how he must have gotten them. And, like, either he was there and didn't interact with her, or...
The mother must be sending them.
Without telling her daughter for all these years.
This is what's... The movie does not want to even mention the mother.
Real scared of the mom.
And maybe there's a deleted scene, but I really do think, like, one line of exposition. Like, before my mother passed away, my whole life up until she passed away, my mother always said that he cared about me, but I asked if he cared, why wasn't he there? So just a line that would imply that, A, my mother has passed away, and B, she defended him up until the end. Those two exposition lines, I think, would wrap it up really tightly.
Would make it tight, yeah. Mm-hmm. It would do it.
I think the last big kind of negative that I want to talk about, and it's two positives that make a negative, but it is the fact that the end of this movie has a completely different energy and tone than the beginning. And once the original Ghostbusters show up, this movie has no interest in the kids or family anymore.
Ooh, well... Hear me out. I do think the last 10 minutes of this movie is a 1980s Ghostbuster movie. Mm. And it gets exponentially better.
And it's fun. I like that movie.
I like that
movie. But that's
not
the movie we'd been watching up until then.
It's not the movie we've been watching up until then. But one thing I will say, in very much the 1980s Ghostbusters vibe, and, you know, these aren't the same, but the 1980s Ghostbusters movies, both of them end as soon as you defeat the villain.
Mm.
There is never this person ended up with them. There's never a wrap-up scene. There is Gozer's been captured. We go outside and the press takes photos and the credits.
Cut to music video. Yeah.
So in that way, it is the 80s Ghostbusters, and it's not this movie. But I at least like that if you're not going to wrap up with the kids, you have precedent.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a movie where you would wrap up with the kids and the mom.
Yeah.
And it really does just as like, fuck it, they were fine, I guess.
Yeah. And like the whole first two acts of the movie, it has modern energy. You're right. Which would end with, you know, the mom has fixed up the farm and they've decided to stay in this town maybe, or like something that has modern energy.
They're going to be the new protectors of this wealth of demon hell or whatever it is. Yeah. She got a job doing something. Yeah. Or like, you know, she and the kids all have friends and it's a happy, happy ending. That's the modern version. It is weird that when the Ghostbusters arrive, the originals, it becomes an 80s Ghostbusters movie.
And it becomes about the original Ghostbusters. About, like, you know, she calls Ray, and Ray has this whole thing about, like, the fallout between him and Egon. And, like, there's this whole arc that the original Ghostbusters go on. And that feels rushed and really sloppy. It does feel like a second script and a second movie that's about the original. And I think maybe the crisis that it's having once the original Ghostbusters show up, which is fun, and I do like it, and it just feels different and out of place, is that part of this ending wants to be that the legacy of Egon is continued with Phoebe. Mm-hmm. And I think part of this movie, once the original Ghostbusters show up, it wants to be the Ghostbusters are always the Ghostbusters, and Phoebe is Egon now. It's the three of them plus Phoebe. Phoebe has continued the legacy of her grandfather. But then there is part of this movie that wants to be like, the brother Trevor is a Ghostbuster, podcast is a Ghostbuster, the lady from the diner is a Ghostbuster.
They put on the Ghostbuster outfits, the four of them work together until the original Ghostbusters arrive.
Yes, so part of this movie wants to be like, it's Ghostbusters, the new class. Look at four new Ghostbusters who come together on under unlikely circumstances to become four Ghostbusters. And then part of this conclusion wants to be, fuck four Ghostbusters. There are three original Ghostbusters and one new Ghostbuster replacing one deceased Ghostbuster. Do not worry about assembling new Ghostbusters because three of the original are still alive and they are here. So do not fucking worry about those other three kids.
The movie absolutely does that. You're absolutely right. The movie really needed a scene after Gozer's defeated of either all four are ghostbusting, like the kids are like still working on it alone in this town, or each Ghostbuster teams up with a kid and teaches them something. And they pass the torch along.
Yeah.
Like you trap these ones up. Like I think Bill Murray would go with podcasts. And they both like talking to microphones. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Lucky absolutely goes with Winston because she is treated exactly like his character.
Yes.
She shows up very late, becomes a Ghostbuster with no character arc.
Yep. She is the...
She is absolutely the Winston of this movie.
She is the one who shows up. She is the one with a job. Like, she is the workaday one who, shows up.
She's not in the plot until you need four people for whatever reason. I think if you team up the other ones with a Ghostbuster at the end, you can make them feel like the new Ghostbusters. But this really, the end really feels like the original Ghostbusters just holding on and saying, no, you can't have it. We're the Ghostbusters.
It really does feel like that. Yeah.
It feels like the next Ghostbusters movie will be the original Ghostbusters again.
I 100% agree. It feels like it was one inch away from passing the torch. And then at the last second was like, no, actually, we still got a little flame left.
They just pulled it back.
We still got a little bit of flame left. And
it feels like when Jeremy Renner was supposed to be the new Bourne and was supposed to be the new Mission Impossible guy.
Right.
And both Tom Cruise and Matt Damon took their franchises back.
We're like, actually, no, we want that back.
Actually, I'm not done with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It does really feel like that. It almost feels disrespectful that they all came back.
It doesn't feel disrespectful that they came back, but they didn't wrap it up in a respectful way.
Yeah.
Because I will say, I think a negative of this movie, a thing that I did not enjoy about it is, as we're wrapping up, is I do think there is a lot of nostalgia porn that is unrelated to the plot that I did not enjoy. There is absolutely no reason for the Marshmallow Men to awaken, do anything. Like, literally, why? Was Gozer sentimental about the last Marshmallow Man she made? Like, there is literally no reason for these Marshmallow Men. And just things like that are, like, throughout the whole movie. It's like, do you like Ecto-1? We're going to show you every angle of it.
Yeah.
And they show it in ways that you're like, well, I already saw it. Like, they throw water on it. But I'm like, it was already clean. Like,
yeah.
I saw the symbol of the Ghostbuster already.
That was a weird shot. Like, it almost feels like that one shot, it feels like it was meant to be way dirtier and you couldn't see the logo.
And that would be great.
That would be a great reveal.
If it was so dirty that they had no idea it was a Ghostbuster car would be wonderful.
And because also at that point in the movie is when they're discovering that, like, the old YouTube videos, and she doesn't even know her grandfather was a Ghostbuster until, like, the scene prior, and then we get the water wiping it off and you would see it. It feels like that should have been the reveal of the logo.
That would have been perfect.
Like that would have been an almost like applaud in the theater moment.
Yeah, because we would have known it was Ecto-1, but, like, actually being like,
see it and feel it. But instead it was just another close-up on it for no particular reason. It's like, ooh, now it's a little cleaner.
Okay.
Sure.
I guess. All right. Very visible before, but I'm glad they got a little water on that car.
Yeah.
So I think there's just a little bit too much, like, you liked the original, didn't you? Like, we got the little handheldy thing, and
right.
we got all the stuff from before, and like, but when they add new things, I think it's more exciting. Like, Gunner chair in the car is really cool, a little RC car, I'm like, these toys are gonna fucking rock.
People are gonna
want the hell out of these, even if they don't like the movie. I think there's too much original nostalgia and not enough new creative things put in. And also, we didn't talk about this much because we've been praising it. I don't think this movie's funny enough. It's a little blah.
Yeah. I agree with you there. I don't think it's blah, but I do think it's not
pleasant and not funny.
Yes.
You're almost never like laugh out loud laughing, but you're always like,
I agree with you that it could use a few more laughs, but I also think that to do what this movie is trying to do, which is to continue the spirit of the original but evolve it, I think you have to do that. I don't think you can do the joke frequency and the goofiness of an 80s movie and nostalgia at the same time. Like, I think that is very difficult to do, to revisit something and capture the same energy at the same pace.
I think it's very easy when you have new characters who have never seen ghosts.
Okay.
None of these characters act like they haven't seen a ghost before.
Right.
No one is like, holy shit, ghosts!
Right.
No one gets slimed. No one is like, oh my God, because Phoebe and podcast don't think ghosts are real. They've never heard of the Ghostbusters.
Right.
Like, no one has a big, funny reaction to ghosts. No one gets covered in slime. No one gets, like, yeah, there's just, like, big things don't happen in this movie. And I would like big things to happen.
I feel you there.
But for the most part, it was an enjoyable experience.
It's fine. It was charming. I think that was Olivia Wilde as Gozer.
Was it?
I believe it was.
I could see it.
She's not currently listed on the IMDb because I think they're trying to hide who that was until a little bit later on in release at the time that we're recording this episode. But I think that looked like her.
Now that you've said it, I would completely believe that it did look like her.
Yeah.
But I can't say for certain.
Yeah, it was a cool embodiment of Gozer.
She looked cool.
Yeah,
I will say, like, yeah, she had like a new outfit and she looked more badass, more like ethereal.
Yeah, while still looking like the previous version as well. Like, this movie did that really well, which is keeping those 80s aesthetics, but updating it, like, just a touch and barely a touch. Like, it's so weird now to see what, like, the Proton Pack, even, for instance. The Proton Pack and, like, the Capture, whatever it's called. They have such a, it almost feels older than the 80s. This, like, steampunk aesthetic. Where if a movie now, like if Ghostbusters never existed and that movie comes out now, I think these things look very light and plasticky. Whereas everything feels like it's made out of cast iron. Like, you look at a Proton Pack, and even in this movie, they didn't redo it and try to make it look like the old one. It looks like the old prop that's made out of legitimately probably 100 pounds of metal that was very difficult for this like teenager to lift. Like,
when McKenna Grace is just putting it on for like 45 seconds, I'm like, I don't even think this is supposed to be comedy. It's just genuinely too big.
I think that this is genuinely the weight of a prop made in the 80s that was made by welders and not 3D printers. So there is like a lot of aesthetic there, and even like the Gozer outfit that I think Olivia Munn wears. But this, like, light-up kind of, like, moving light aesthetic, I feel like some of it was practical lights as well.
I think it was. I think it was a real, like, Project Runway, like, we're putting lights in it, we're gonna make it cool.
And that felt very, like, 80s but modern updated as well. It was, yeah, really, really well done in terms of, like, wardrobe and costume and the gunner seat and the car and all the look of it, yeah.
Yeah, all the look of it. It felt like the same universe, except for the fact that no one remembered Ghost for real.
Yes.
Except for Paul Rudd.
Yeah, I feel like that would come up in schools.
The Statue of Liberty walked down New York.
It did walk down New York.
They weren't all just private ghosts.
Yeah, one of them was the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm. On New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve. People would remember New Year's Eve 1989?
Nine. Yeah, that would go down in history. The day the Statue of Liberty walked down the street.
People to bring that up. People would bring that up. All right. Well, I'm feeling good about Ghostbusters Afterlife. How are you feeling?
It made me feel good.
It did make me feel good as well. Well, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we've discussed everything we've discussed, what would you change about this movie if you could change anything? But before we do go in for the final question, we want to thank our other sponsor of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at NordVPN.
NordVPN. They're your cyber Swiss Army knife, and also their equivalent of buying a cup of coffee every month for premium cybersecurity and access to vast amounts of entertaining content. Content across the web.
Across the web. A VPN like Nord is going to make the World Wide Web proper world, all right? Because with a VPN, what you can do is you can turn it on, you can make your internet seem like it's coming from a different location, which is going to give you additional security. It's going to prevent hackers from getting into you. It keeps everything safe using a service like NordVPN. And then also, it will often allow you to access content that maybe is geo-blocked in your region. So we're in Canada. Sometimes we go to look at something that's like, you can't because you're in Canada. And I'm like, what if I'm in the UK? Wink. And then suddenly they're like, okay, you are. And it's because of NordVPN.
It gives you complete global access to anything that would be available to you. If you were in those countries, you can get things to 59 different countries. So all over the world, it is the fastest VPN in the world. And you can also have one account on up to 6 devices. So you can protect your laptop, your phone, your smart TV, your iPad, anything you want to protect or anything you want to get to the web on.
Yeah.
If you're going on the web,
we've got
one Nordic.
We've got it in our house on maybe the full 6 devices. We've got it on different OSs. I've got it installed on my Android phone, on my Mac computer, on everything. And it's one click. It is so easy. Yeah. Like if I was just cutting onions and I had watery eyes and I could barely see, I could just still turn it on because it's just one big button on the app.
It's one big button.
It's one big button.
And then you choose a country from a drop-down list.
It makes it real simple.
It's like you feel like you're just hitting that easy button.
Yeah. Simple, secure, and then going to get you content in ways that you never expected. So check it out. You can grab NordVPN's Cyber Month deal. Go to nordvpn.com/TFS or use promo code TFS to get up to 73% off your NordVPN plan plus a bonus gift. So once again, that's nordvpn.com/TFS. Use promo code TFS, up to 73% off your plan plus a bonus gift. Thank you, NordVPN, for your support.
Thank you, Nord, and thanks for all the content.
Huzzah! And as well, before we get into the final question, we'll remind you as we do every week, if you haven't already, take a minute, subscribe, rate, review, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. It takes a second. Do it for us and a couple of the podcasts you love. I know everyone tells you to do this because it's actually important to do. It helps us move up the charts, find new audience. Hit us up.
We are asking for the not last time, but one more time for your reviews and your subscriptions and your 5-star ratings, please.
Yes, and also we read them and it warms our hearts, so it means a lot to us.
It's getting cold here in Canada, so we need them.
We need that warmth.
They're going to keep us alive.
So do that when you have a moment. Free way to support the podcast. And if you do want to support the podcast monetarily, you can do that over on our Patreon page at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's where you can subscribe at whatever you can afford on any given month. So you can subscribe at $1 a month, 2, 3, 5, 10, 20, whatever you can afford, whatever's in your budget. And you can also do yearly. There's different options, but there's no obligation. You can cancel or change on any given month. And with that, you'll get cool bonuses as well.
Yeah, at the $1 level, you get Text from Superhero a day early, or maybe even 2 days if I Photoshop it 2 days early. Lots of stuff. And at the $10 level, you get access to all the extra episodes of Talk from Superheroes. They are full-length episodes on things we never cover on the regular podcast. This month, we did Ghostbusters 2. If you love all the Ghostbusters, we did Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters, or the all-female, the 2016 one. We did that years ago when it came out. So you can go back in the archives because you get immediate access to all the old episodes when you sign up at the $10 level. So there's more Ghostbusters awaiting
There's more busting.
If it makes you feel good.
If it makes you feel good. You can head on over to patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's patreon.com/fromsuperheroes today. And thank you to all of our current patrons and to all of our future patrons. Thank you. If it's in the budget, we appreciate it. If it's not, we understand. But check it out if you can.
Thank you so much, patrons.
Thank you. And now let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
I have a very small change and then I have a big change. One thing that I think was not super well used was that Finn Wolfhard, the brother, was always at this diner and then he was half the rest of the time alone fixing up the car. I'm going to do an economy of storytelling. The girl he likes works at a car repair shop. They fix up the car together. No two different story. Thank you. Oh, this is just the quick fix, you guys. This is just the quick little repair.
I fucking adore this.
Oh, man, maybe I don't need my second quick fix. But yes, the girl he likes works at a car repair shop. They fix up Ecto-1 together. So they bond over the car. They figure out the car together. Like, what's the gunner see? Why does it go fast? How does it shoot things? What does it do? They're both involved in the car. So he's not just off alone doing car stuff for like three scenes.
Yeah.
Which is a waste of our time.
Yeah.
And we don't need him to work in a diner because it's unrelated to the plot.
Yeah.
So they work on the car together at the car shop.
That is...
Wow, that really...
Print this off, put it in a book. That is efficiency of storytelling right there.
I'm an efficient storyteller.
That is a beautiful, perfect, and concise example of efficient storytelling. I love that.
You're welcome. My other change is more character related. I actually thought the brother and sister had really cute chemistry in like the one scene they had together. Like when he asked her if she'd been practicing her jokes and he wasn't trying to make fun of her. He was like, you've been working on him? Like they did have a nice fun chemistry and didn't seem to hang out. So I would like them together more for like the ghost hunting parts and more of their relationship. And I think I would even add more of an element of like, not opposites, but he like does believe in ghosts and she believes in science until she sees enough ghosts. And it might add this like fun like Mulder and Scully dynamic of she's fully science and he's like, I saw the Statue of Liberty walk down the street. Like I think ghosts are real. And then at the end, I think it even kind of works. You don't have to change anything because he sciences when he shoots the capacitors with his proton pack. Mm-hmm. And she kind of believes in her grandfather and is able to beat Gozer that way.
Oh, okay.
So you don't even have to change that part. But if you establish a little bit that they're kind of like a yin and yang in that way earlier, it might be like a little bit more resonant at the end.
I could see that. Yeah, I can get on board with that.
But mostly, I guess I'm changing a car shop is in this movie.
I love it. I love it. That one's bigger for me. Okay. That one's bigger. I do think that the brother and sister should have more scenes together. I am definitely on board with that aspect.
All right. Well, those are my two changes for Ghostbusters Afterlife. Andrew, what would you change?
My big change is I'm floored by the mechanic thing. I think that's just
wow.
Like it's right there. It's so clean if you make that change.
And also it's irrelevant that her dad's a cop.
Oh, yeah. I completely forgot her dad was a cop.
It's not like
her dad's
she was
the
like,
sheriff or
yeah,
whatever.
It wasn't like she was like, I can shoot guns, which are like proton packs or anything like that. Like, yeah. Her dad was just the sheriff for no reason.
Yeah.
She had two completely nonsensical, a diner and a cop.
Yeah, where they all need to find their own core competencies as to, like, why they're a team of Ghostbusters, you know? So my change is if they're doing this the way they do it, which is... You're bringing in the original Ghostbusters at the end. They need to have two teams in two different places.
Ooh, I love that. One at the mountain and one at the farm?
Exactly. Mm. Because they have those proton packs. Egon set up like a trap to be if there's a surge of power, these proton packs in the mountain automatically fire the Gozer energy or whatever back into the mountain. And then possessed Paul Rudd destroys those and busts it all up. Because Bustin makes him feel good in that scenario. But we never really kind of, like, go back to that, like, it's the same kind of, like, almost like lava energy from the second Ghostbusters movie. I think we split up the teams, and then it emphasizes why this can be the two movies it wants to be. It can be a we're getting the team back together nostalgia trip at the end, and it can also be a we're passing the torch to a new generation. Because it can be then the, like, the kids take down Gozer, while the original team are like, we're going to hold it back. Like, kids, you need to do the heavy work. Like,
we're just going to shoot the guns at the mountain until you can finish this up.
Absolutely. That moment where they hit the car and they're, like, all severely hurt because they're men in their 60s who've just been thrown at a car. That should be the end of them. That should be them, like, getting in the car to be like, we're going to go fight back the surging ghosts that are coming out of the mountain. You kids got to take care of this. And then, like... Then give a speech to be like, you're Egon. Like, you're the Ghostbuster we need. Like, there would be no Ghostbusters.
Lovely.
Assemble your own team. Like, get your own thing together. So, yeah, I think we need to split them up in order to keep that joy of, hey, it's the old crew, and that passing of the torch of it's the new crew.
I really like that. I like that a lot more for the people of this movie getting to feel like it's their movie. Because it does feel like it's a 1980s Ghostbuster movie at the end, especially with the two after credit scenes, both being about the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
The kids and the mom are forgotten.
Yes. Yeah, in the after credits, it's like, and forget this movie happened because we're going to get Ernie Hudson, who looks phenomenal, by the way.
Looks like he hasn't aged a day. Like, he is embarrassing Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray.
Looks younger than me. It is insane.
He looks so good.
It is, and Ernie Hudson has been working, don't get me wrong, but typically whenever there's like a reunion of something that used to be a thing, like, which happens more and more common now, be like, we're getting these actors back together. Usually whoever has been working the most and making the most money looks the youngest, just because that's how Hollywood works. And in this scenario, that should be Bill Murray.
He looks the worst.
But Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, I think, have many wonderful years left of their life and career. But they look one foot in the ground, and Ernie Hudson looks like he's going to bury them there. Like, Ernie Hudson looks like he came to fight a Terminator.
Ernie Hudson, I look at him, and I'm like, was the goo from the second movie like a fountain of youth or something? Like, who did you kill to stay looking that good?
He is looking crisp.
Looking crisp.
But the post-credit scene being like, it's his movie. It's going to be his franchise now. Here's a new Ghostbuster logo.
But we just started a new one with the kids.
With the kids, yeah. So yeah.
Think about the children.
Think about the children. So I love your mechanic idea, and I would split up the teams at the end.
I like that. I love that idea. Yeah. Really, it helps to pass the torch so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. All right.
We did it. That's going to be it for Ghostbusters Afterlife. We fixed it. We solved it. And one thing is for sure, Bustin makes us feel good.
And that's the last time you're going to have to hear us say that for, like, probably a while. Bustin makes me feel good. Ray Parker Jr. said it, not us. So, right,
so legally,
that didn't count.
Legally, that don't count. That don't count legally.
That didn't count.
We're going to be back next week on the podcast. Next week, we're going to be talking about Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City.
Oh, we're going to come see you, Raccoon City. We're going to look at all your sights.
Coming at you, Raccoon City. Coming at you, Resident Evil. I can't get enough. Num-num-num.
We thought we'd done all the Resident Evils ever to come.
Hey, they just won't die, baby.
That is kind of their thing.
So we'll be back next week talking about that. In the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter at Ivamey, I-V-I-M-E-Y.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.